The following program is for mature audiences only. Football talk shows, most of them sound like this. Blah, 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 blah. Not this one. That's because it features the former director of college scouting with the Chicago Bears. He worked on the staff that drafted, you know, the likes of Devin Hester, Olin Krutz, Lance Briggs. He's the man who takes shit from absolutely nobody. He's Greg Gabriel. Gabriel joins longtime Chicago sports reporter David Schuster. And this is, accordingly, Gabriel Schuster Talk Bears.
And welcome into the third edition of the Gabriel Schuster Podcast. I am David Schuster, and he, of course, is the longtime NFL scouting director and all-around guru, Greg Gabriel. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing just well, thank you. And let's start, first of all, with news of the XFL. And, of course, you were involved and are still involved, I should say, with the Washington franchise of the XFL. And a lifesaver was basically thrown to the league the other day. It still has to be approved by a bankruptcy judge. But why don't you update us with what's going on with the XFL?
Well, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, a capital group, I think it's called Redbird Capital, and The Rock's business manager, who happens to be his ex-wife, Danny Garcia, bought the league for, I think, a figure of $15 million, if I'm not mistaken. Which is
seems like
if I had 50, if I had 15 million, I would have done that because yeah. The good deal. But I'll never see the 15. I've been in talking to people over the last couple months. We always felt confident that something was going to happen, that was going to continue and be bought. From what I was told, there was some groups that had high interest as soon as last week, and pulled out. Some say it's the networks. I don't know exactly for sure if the networks were involved, but some say Disney and Fox. And the reason they did pull out is because of the uncertainty in the future going forward with no vaccine, with the mm-hmm. pandemic. So they pulled up. Now, at $15 million, you might be able to park the league for a year, and it's really not going to cost you a lot of money, and then you have it going forward at a very inexpensive price. So but you know, in talking to people that had held the same position that I had, I was a director of player personnel of the Washington franchise. The general managers were the head coaches, but nobody from whom I've talked to at any level that was in the league has heard from the new owners yet. And I think that's because until the sale is approved by the bankruptcy judge, they're keeping things close to the vest, so to speak. Uh-huh. Jeffrey Pollock, who was the CEO and president of the league, he has supposedly been rehired as the CEO and president of XFL 3.0, so to speak. I don't think Oliver Luck's going to be involved as commissioner. I liked Oliver a lot. He was very easy to work with. I got to know him pretty well. I don't think he's going to be involved. Still remains to be seen. But I'm kind of excited to see what happens over the next, say, 2 weeks. I'm sure we'll get a better idea of what's going to happen. I have had conversations with people. Our team lost its head coach, Pep Hamilton. Pep went to the LA Chargers as the quarterback coach, and they took a quarterback in the first round, so he's got a lot of work to do there. But I have recommended a person to be the head coach for that franchise. You know, I've sent texts to people that were high up in the league, and they're hoping that they're involved in the new league, so we'll see what happens.
Well, a couple things. First of all, The Rock is working with his ex-wife, who's his business manager. I envy anybody who can work with their ex-wife. That's number one, and I'll just leave that one alone at this point. But also, I can just see The Rock going in front of the bankruptcy judge and basically saying, "Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?" And, you know, maybe that'll put it over the top. $15 million sounds like, it's a lot of money to me and all of us here. But for a league, that sounds like a pretty good deal. Now, the XFL had good TV ratings while they were on the air. They're also talking about if there's no vaccine and if the pandemic is still ongoing, that the XFL would also operate in a bubble. I don't know how that's going to work, much like the NBA and the NHL are currently doing. So there's a lot of things that are still going on. But actually, I think it sounds like a good deal, and I think it's going to go through.
Well, you know, if you look at the league as a whole, before we had a shutdown because of the pandemic, we had far exceeded expectations as far as TV ratings, attendance, level of play, everything. So we were very happy with the product that was on the field. Now, let's fast forward a little bit to this bubble thing. We had a similar situation to that in training camp in that the whole league was in Houston for 3.5 weeks in January preparing for the regular season. And we had, you know, joint practices with other teams. All you had to do was go across town. So that was a semi-bubble type situation and that we were all in one place. But still, given the numbers involved with a football franchise, I think it's pretty hard to do what they're doing in the NBA and the NHL, only because you're going to have, when you count training camp rosters and then all your support staff, you know, you're talking well over 100 people involved per team times eight. It's a lot of people. So you're saying well over 1,000 people or about 1,000 people. So whether they can actually pull off that bubble situation, I think that remains to be seen. Again, I'm just anxious to see what happens over the course of the next couple weeks to see what will happen going forward.
All right, Greg, still to come in this podcast, we're going to be talking with a good friend of yours, Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports. And Eric is well connected throughout the league. We'll get some good stuff from him. But we also want to talk certainly about the Bears. The Bears are about to start their training camp. There will not be any hitting, I'm told, in practice, for at least a couple of weeks. So we're going to talk a lot about that. But obviously, the first and foremost thing when you're talking about the Bears going into their training camp is the quarterback situation. And earlier this week, last week, the media had a chance to talk to the two quarterbacks that are vying for the starting position, that being obviously Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. And we're going to hear from them in just a couple of seconds. But what do you think going into training camp? How do you think the coaches are looking at that battle?
I think from the public perspective and what they're saying is that it's going to be an even battle. Having been in those situations,
I don't think it's going to be an even battle.
And I'm with you. I think given the situation of what we are going through now in today's world, you had no off-season program. In fact, going back to what you just said a few seconds ago, right now is the off-season program, this acclimation period that they're going through. That's basically getting in shape, doing the stuff they would have been doing during the off-season program in May and in OTAs in June. So that's being covered now. Then you're going to get into, you'll have probably shells and helmets, but not full pads, and you'll have some offense versus teamwork. Again, that'll be more like your OTA period. And then you'll get into about another week and a half to 2 weeks of, quote, training camp where there's all-out contact. So it's going to be a lot different than anything we've ever seen. And then also, the interesting part is, you know, as media members, we've always been able to go out to different practices and kind of look at the squad yourself and say, okay, this guy's going to make it, this guy isn't. You know, who looks better than who, and you can report or write what you see. That's not going to happen this year. You're not going to see a thing, at least the way it's set up right now. And so you'll find out what's going on opening day when the opening kickoff is, and then you're going to be able to say, did they make the right decision or didn't they? So there'll be a lot of second guessing, obviously.
All right, Greg, let's hear from the two combatants, if you will, both Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky, and we'll start with the veteran coming into training camp, that being Nick Foles. And initially he talks about he's not really worried about either being a starter or a backup.
I'm just going out there, and if I'm working the second team, third team, first team, like, let's just play ball, man. I love this offense. I love the verbiage. I've been in this offense. I know what I can do in this offense. But all that stuff gives me is wisdom. Wisdom to go out there and help my teammates, to help Mitch, to help Tyler. I'm not keeping secrets from Mitch. Like, I want to help Mitch. So if there's a play that I've ran a lot and I know a lot, I'm going to give him that information, just like, you know, I know he will with me, because we're working to help each other. And, you know, when he makes a great throw, I'm going to be right there to, you know, slap him a five, and then they'll probably have to, like, sanitize our hands, but I'm going to do it. That's part of this thing, is it is a competition, but we're all on the same team, so we're going to push each other every day, but there's got to be a healthy way to do it.
And Greg, one more from Foles, and then I'll have you comment on what he's saying here. He says, yes, it's a competition, but it's not cutthroat.
And whoever's the best person at executing this offense that can help the Chicago Bears win games and lead this team should be the starter, and then the other guys will be there to support him. And if for some reason that starter gets hurt, then the guy who's behind him will go in, and he will lead the team, and then the other guy. That's how the best teams play. That's how the best teams work. I don't just say that from not – I've been on those teams. I've seen how it works, and that's how I approach it. And that's what's important to me. And as you can see, I'm pretty passionate about that. I'm pretty passionate about helping people. I'm pretty passionate about developing relationships. I've seen it done very well, and I've seen it done very poorly. So I can pull from each way.
Greg, sounds like your backup quarterback to me. What do you think?
You know, I was going to say the same thing. I had not heard that cut at all until right now. And listening to it, he was talking like a backup.
And he's got an experience as a backup.
That's right.
That's not to say that he won't ultimately be the starting quarterback, but I think the deck is stacked against him. There's no preseason games. There's not going to be that much really in training camp for him to prove to the coaches that, although I'm sure some of them probably already think he's the better quarterback, but there's just too much invested in Trubisky. And with everything the way it is, I think Trubisky's a starter already.
Ryan Pace does not want Mitch Trubisky to fail. I'm sure Matt Nagy doesn't want Mitch Trubisky to fail. Is it going to be a level playing field? I think it's going to be a semi-level playing field, but, you know, as Foles just said, he goes, well, he knows the terminology. Sure he does. So he's not going to feel uncomfortable going into the situation. And going back a little, that's one of the reasons they went out and traded for him, because he knows the offense. Don't forget, when they made the trade, it was after this pandemic had already started. Mm-hmm. So they knew what they didn't know exactly what was going to happen going forward, but they knew that they weren't going to have much going on as far as the preseason an offseason program goes. And they felt a lot more comfortable with a player like Foles, who has experience in this particular offense, than, say, going out and get a Cam Newton. You know, I think that Cam Newton was never in the conversation. And then, as we talked about in our last podcast, 31 other teams said no to Cam Newton until just a few weeks ago when the Patriots signed him.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. I'm going to follow that story in New England. We're going to talk about all the opt-outs, and I don't know, eight guys have already opted out, and we're going to talk about that whole thing, not only in New England, but around the league. But let's hear from Mitch Trubisky now. And interestingly, a couple of cuts from him. And by the way, even though we don't have it on tape, he basically is saying, I am the starter, get away from me. That's you'll feel this from the two actualities we're about to play. But initially here, Greg, and it's interesting, he's worked on his footwork, he's worked on his mechanics, and he says mechanically he's already a better quarterback.
It's been really fun. I feel like my motion is better. I feel like I'm more in balance and the ball's coming out more accurately. So I'm confident with where I'm at right now and how all that work has helped me this offseason. So I'm excited about it.
All right, well, the proof is in the pudding. We'll just have to wait and see. And one more from him. He says, even though he thinks he's going to be the starter and he's already anointed himself, all he wants is honesty from the coaching staff.
Yeah, for sure. I think just transparency and honesty, which they have been the whole entire time. And it might not be exactly what you want to hear, but, I mean, that's how you get through this thing. And I think that's what creates good quarterback competition. And hopefully this competition just makes our whole quarterback room and our whole offense even better, which I think it will. So you just want honesty the whole entire time and make sure it's fair and everybody's getting an equal shot. And just the type of coaches and people we have in our building, I believe it will be. So it's not really a big concern.
And Greg, he went on and on and on when he was talking to the media the other day about his mechanics, his footwork, his throwing motion. Obviously, he had a problem with his shoulder that I guess they corrected surgically during the offseason. But when he talks about mechanics and footwork and in throwing motion, and I don't know anything about either one of those, help me out. What is he talking about?
Well, I think if you look at a lot of his bad throws and, you know, it's tough to explain over a podcast, but the footwork is important because you're obviously leading with your left foot and then, you know, throwing with your right arm. And if your left foot isn't in the right position, that can lead to a ball being off target. Also, the release point can lead to a ball being off target. You know, it's the same thing with baseball or, a shooter in basketball. Everything's got to be in sync and perfect, or otherwise the ball doesn't go where you want it to go.
Yeah, but shouldn't that stuff already have been done years and years ago? And how do you draft a guy at number two overall if he's got bad mechanics?
You know, when I look at tape, I don't think he had bad mechanics. I think his footwork, when he had bad throws, his footwork was off.
Okay.
But when you look at his throwing motion, I didn't see anything wrong with the throwing motion at all. Nothing that I could say, hey, he's got to do this, he's got to do that in order to fix it. You did see problems with his footwork, and a lot of times I think he opened up a little bit too much with his left foot, and that... And sometimes his release point was a little bit off. And when you look at that, the ball can sail a little bit. But, overall, I think it's minor adjustments. Problem you see with quarterbacks when you're making a big change in a delivery motion is that during the off season and when you're practicing by yourself, it's easy to work on those new mechanics and get them down. But when you get into the heat of battle, a lot of coaches will say you're going to revert back to what you were doing wrong in the first place. And you can go back to several quarterbacks over the years that have tried to make changes, and they always revert back.
All right. Well, that'll be the big story, obviously, in training camp overall. But there are other stories, obviously, as the Bears are set to begin. We're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, so by the time a lot of people are listening to this podcast, the Bears might have already started their training camp. But one of the big stories that occurred last week, not only with the Bears, but around the league, are players opting out. And the deadline, again, we're recording this on Wednesday. The deadline is tomorrow, late Thursday afternoon, for players to opt out. And the Bears have already lost two players. The most prominent, of course, is defensive tackle Eddie Goldman, and that's going to hurt. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that, because he's the anchor of that defense and the anchor of the defensive line. They've also lost safety Jordan Lucas. So let me ask you, Greg, what are the effects of losing both those guys, especially on the defense?
Lucas's loss is going to be mostly as a special teams player in depth. I think they were looking for him to fill that position. Very, very good special teams player. But Eddie Goldman is, and I think we talked about Eddie a little bit a couple weeks ago, you know, he is one of the key players on the defense. Now, in saying that, he's mostly a rundown player. He had his four and a half sacks. But when you look at the game, the way it's played now, and especially the way the Bears have played defense, they're in their sub-package at least 75% of the time. And that means two interior defensive linemen and then two outside edge guys. When the Bears are in their sub-package, Goldman is more of a role player, situational player, because he's not the strongest pass rusher. You know, they're going to have Roy Robertson and Harris in there in front of Eddie Goldman in the sub-package. But still, on your base downs, first and 10, he's a key player, and replacing him is going to be hard. Now, the number one guy to do it is John Jenkins, who was here a couple years ago, and they re-signed him in free agency this year. You know, a week and a half ago, he was put on the COVID list, but he's already come off it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, going into camp, the acclimation part of training camp, he should be ready to go. It still wouldn't surprise me that, you know, over the next week or so, they reach out and try to sign another veteran. I can't tell you who's on the street right now. But, you know, based on the number of opt-outs around the league, there's going to be a lot of people looking to sign some of these people, and that's going to actually push up the price for some of these guys.
All right, as we're recording this, I think the number was up to 56, if I'm not mistaken, of players that have opted out. It'll be more by the time Thursday, you know, finally comes around. But a couple of prominent players that come to mind real quickly: Kansas City losing running back Damian Williams, two touchdowns in the last Super Bowl. The Jets losing linebacker C.J. Mosley. New England, as of right now, as we record this, has lost eight players. I don't think any other team has more than two or three. What should we read into that? That's weird.
You know, there's a lot of people think that Belichick is behind this and that, you know, it's Tank City so they can get the quarterback from Clemson, Lawrence. I don't buy it. You know, I worked with Bill for 7 years at the Giants. That's the most competitive guy you'll ever be around. And I don't even think the word tank enters his brain at any time, you know, at any time frame at all. That's not going to happen. He's going to try to win every game he's involved in. He's going to go with what he has, and he'll just forget about the guys who aren't there.
Yeah. All right. Listen, so much more for us personally to get to, but we're going to take a break here real quickly. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports, good friend of yours. Good stuff in store. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Don't miss any future Gabriel Schuster Talk Bears podcast or any one of the other over a dozen podcasts the Barroom Network has available. All you gotta do is go to iTunes or Stitcher or Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, and subscribe to Bears Barroom Radio Network. All of our podcasts will then be automatically downloaded to your device. You can also listen to our podcast on our YouTube channel, Bears Barroom, and on Spotify, Bears Barroom Radio Network.
Bears Barroom.
And Greg, right now we're joined by Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports, and you can follow him as I do on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. And why don't you do a further introduction of your good friend?
Well, I've known Eric for a few years. We both worked at Pro Football Weekly for a while, and Eric is very good at what he does. He's now one of the lead draft guys for Yahoo Sports, has a lot of connections around the league, and is very knowledgeable as to not only the Bears, but the NFL as a whole.
I want to come on your show weekly, guys. My goodness, what a nice introduction. I appreciate that very much.
Well, you gave me $20 beforehand, so I had to make sure it was right.
Yeah, hey, I mean, whatever. That's cheap for me.
Hey, Eric, I know you want to argue about, or at least debate, if you will, about the Nick Foles, Mitch Trubisky situation, and Greg and I have already done that. We've already come to the conclusion that Trubisky's going to be the starter, but we'll get into that in just a second. But I've been reading a lot of your stuff on Twitter, and it seems like more and more college players are already opting out of playing, if there is even a college season, to get ready for if there's an NFL season next season. That's a lot of seasons in that line right there. But are you following that more and more, that a lot of guys are just going to bypass their college career and just try and get ready for the pros?
Yeah, I mean, I broke the news last night about Micah Parsons, the fantastic Penn State linebacker. He hasn't officially announced yet, but I was told with certainty last night that he was going to be opting out of the season. We've already seen Caleb Farley, a cover man from Virginia Tech, who I think could end up being a first-round pick. Rashad Bateman, another Big Ten player from Minnesota, wide receiver who, you know, is right in that same mix of being a mid to late first rounder the way things stand right now. Obviously, a lot could change. But, yeah, I mean, that's three fairly big-name players. I've heard other names. You know, you wouldn't be shocked to hear Penei Sewell from Oregon, the left tackle. I know Justin Fields from Ohio State came out and sort of defiantly said he's playing, but you know, conditions change, situations change quickly. It wouldn't be shocking, obviously, to some people if there wasn't even a college football season or not a complete one. Yeah, I think, look, I mean, I don't blame the agents, but I know they're hovering. You know, they're swooping in and sort of reading the room and seeing what's happening. And, you know, a lot of these guys are kind of weighing their individual futures. And, you know, you can't blame them for at least investigating it, looking into the possibility of just training and preserving their bodies and, you know, risking, you know, missing a season if there is one.
You know, Eric, just watching this from the outside, it wouldn't shock me that some of these guys, especially guys that are valued highly by the NFL, start off the season, and depending on what their team is doing, could decide to opt out the rest of the way. There's no money involved as far as contractual money or anything like that. So, you know, it's not like there's going to be a deadline to opt out with college football players. So it wouldn't shock me if a team starts off with a losing record. And a lot of these teams are going to end up being, you know, playing just 10 games. And once we get into it, might not even be 10 games. You know, if they start off 2-4 or 1-3 or something like that, then they're going to say, screw it. I'm getting ready for the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I think that's a very high possibility. We could see this trickle into the season. And you're right. I mean, Nick Bosa essentially did that a couple of years ago, right? I mean, there was a core muscle injury. That's not necessarily considered a serious injury, but it's one that can linger. And after basically 2.5 games, he just said, all right, I'm pretty much preserving my body and resting for the entire season.
But he did have surgery. He had surgery, too, though. True. So that played
into it. Yeah, no, I mean, Miles Jack, same thing a couple years back. I mean, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus or say it was, you know, but that mindset has now existed for a few years among those elite prospects, those top tier guys. So the fact that, you know, we have more conditions that are unknown, you know, in a landscape that is very much kind of the Wild West right now, I wouldn't be shocked to see that kind of thing happen that you just laid out.
No, not at all.
Hey, Eric, let me ask you this, because earlier today, Connecticut just dumped all its fall sports. That means they're not going to be playing football, not that they're a powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And some other leagues have already dumped their games, and some other conferences have said they're only going to play conference games. Let me just throw out this possibility. If the college season doesn't even occur, which is at least a possibility, hopefully that doesn't happen, what happens with the NFL draft next year? And I've asked this to Greg also. Then you're going to have general managers who are trying to draft players they haven't seen for at least 1 year and a lot longer than that.
And let me throw a hypothetical at both you guys. You know, what if there's no NFL season? I still think there will be, but what happens to the draft order in that situation, right? That could create some unbelievable chaos. We'd have to kind of go back to, you know, the 2005 NHL draft when Sidney Crosby was coming out. They didn't have a season because of the lockout the year before, and they went to this sort of strange lottery. So, yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of unknowns. But back to your question about the prospects, I mean, I think in the case of certain players, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily think Trevor Lawrence from Clemson is a perfect prospect. I mean, not the guy that everybody was making him out to be after his freshman year. But still, there's a lot to like about him, and I don't think it's going to affect guys like that. But maybe Justin Fields, if he decides to change course at Ohio State, if he doesn't play, you know, maybe there's a little bit more doubt. We don't know if Trey Lance is going to be, you know, playing this year. He's, you know, they're obviously moving to the spring, and so, you know, he could be an opt-out candidate as well. It's going to be tough, but the more players that are on that opt-out list or who play, like Greg suggested, possibly only part of the season, the more that new normal becomes, you know, sort of accepted, I think. I don't think it's going to be held against guys like when the first wave of players skipping bowl games happened. You know, what is this going to do? Well, eventually people got over it. Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette were both top 10 picks. I mean, you know, there's plenty of examples. So I'm sure, as Greg would tell you, it's a lot tougher, though. You don't have that recent tape and that last year jump or fallback can obviously affect the guy's stock quite a bit.
Well, if there's no college football, the only thing you can rely on is the tape from the 2019 season. Right. And then, obviously, workouts are going to come into play, but you don't want to put too much stock into workouts because that's not real football. But, you know, and let's just turn the page a little bit here and go to the XFL. This is where I think if we do have an XFL, being that it was bought earlier this week and there is an XFL season next spring, I think you are going to see a number of players, especially from these FCS-level schools that have already said they're not playing football this fall. They're going to push it to next spring. I think you're going to see a lot of those players try to get in the XFL if the XFL does, in fact, play next spring.
Wouldn't it be fascinating? I mean, you know, I quoted Urban Meyer in the story that I wrote a couple weeks ago about how spring football could really affect the 2021 draft. And so the idea of some of these smaller schools or FCS schools that do shift their seasons. And Urban Meyer brought up a good point that I hadn't thought about, which is kind of that 1,000-snap limit that they tried to put on players. And he basically said, look, if you have college football players playing a football season in the spring and then trying to go right into minicamps and then play a full season in the NFL, their body is going to break down. Their studies have shown over years at Ohio State that when they push players past that 1,200, 1,300 snap mark, you know, including practices and everything else, those live snaps, it really sort of put guys in risk of how many injuries they had and how prone they were to getting hurt. So I don't know if that would factor in with the XFL, but it would be a fascinating developmental platform for a lot of these guys, especially the ones, like you said, from the North Dakota States and the UW Whitewaters and those types of schools.
Right, and I'm referring really specifically to the FCS level schools.
Correct.
Okay, and now you can throw in Connecticut. And one of the reasons I think Connecticut you know, dropped football for this season is because they weren't in a conference. They didn't have any games to play. Most of these conferences are playing conference-only games. Connecticut had nobody to play based on the fact that they were, you know, had no conference affiliation. Now, Notre Dame was in the same boat, but they were in the ACC for all the other sports, so the ACC just brought them in for football, and that was good for football. Connecticut isn't Notre Dame.
Right, and I will say this. I have heard in the last sort of 48 hours or so, and I haven't, you know, I'm not going to say specific schools, but there are some group of five schools, right, you know, who right now are making critical decisions on whether they can afford to have a season or whether they're going to go through with the season or whether they feel like they're safe enough. So, you know, they're not big name schools necessarily, but they're names that any casual football fan would know. So even with these conferences sort of saying, we're going forward, here's the plan, here's what we think the schedule's going to be, blah, 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 I don't know that it's set in stone for some of these schools. I really, really don't. And I fear that there may be some others that who are in conferences who could fall into that situation.
All right. So, Eric, both Greg and myself, we've already broached the Nick Foles, Mitch Trubisky situation, and that's the number one story with the Bears going into training camp on top of Eddie Goldman already opting out, obviously. But we also already heard from both Foles and Trubisky, who talked to the media earlier this week. You know, Foles basically sounding like he's a backup again, and Trubisky basically anointing himself the starter, even though nobody else really has, although Greg and I both think that's what's going to happen. And Trubisky went out of his way to say, well, his mechanics, he worked on them all off season, and he's going to be better mechanically. The fans don't care about that. They just want to see a good quarterback. But what are your thoughts about the Foles-Trubisky situation coming into the Bears training camp?
Yeah, I think had you asked me that question in May or whatever, I mean, you know, not knowing where we'd be today and everything, I probably would have said, boy, Foles has got a great chance to win it. You know, that was sort of my thinking over the late spring and early summer. But as we got closer to camp and it was clear that these facilities were going to be shut down to a certain point, you know, that these are only going to be virtual meetings. And Greg, you and I talked about it on the phone a while back, like it is kind of tilted back in Mitch's favor. And the fact that, you know, Nick has so much experience being a backup and being called on in tough situations and thriving in those situations, you know, as much as the Bears paid for Foles' contract and also giving up, you know, a pick in trade, you know, I've started to come into your camp now. I'd love to be able to sit here and say, no, Foles is going to get the job. But with this small window, I think I've shifted over to your side on this thing more and felt like there are still people in House Hall who want to give him that last shot and feel like if they can keep his confidence high, they can get something out of him.
You're not being fun. We wanted to argue. But that's
no, I know. I know. All right. Here's the deal. But here's the thing, like, how long a leash does he get, you guys? That's what I want to know from you. Like, does he get four starts? Does he get six? Does he get a season? What does he get? There's always going to be that lingering Foles presence there somewhere.
I think the leash is going to be very short. And as we discussed, you know, previously, when you look at the play history of Nick Foles is at his best coming off the bench. He had one good season, and that was in 2013 when Chip Kelly took over as head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, and part of that had to do with Kelly's offense in the league trying to figure out that offense. He had a lot of success, 28 touchdowns. I think he had maybe 29, only two interceptions. He went to the Pro Bowl, had a great season. Other than that season, anytime he has started the season as a starter for a team, he's failed.
Yeah.
But when he's come off the bench and had to take over for either an injured starter or a starter that hasn't played well, he's played very, very well. That's his strong point. Now, why that happens, I can't give you the answer to that. But I think that knowing this offense, knowing the terminology, and it's going to take him a while to get to know the players, especially given the practice situations the way they are, I think that's exactly what's going to happen here.
And when people gripe about, wow, you took on that contract and you gave up a draft pick, you could have had Cam Newton and all that, I mean, I get that argument on the surface, but the way you just described it there, which is the fact that Foles is a little bit of a different dude, right? He's been on some different teams. He's been in this system before. The familiarity with some of the Bears' assistants has to have played into it, obviously. But the fact that, you know, he can kind of check his ego at the door and understand that it's going to work out in the long run. If Mitch plays well, you know, and I don't have to be called on and we win games, it's a good thing for the team. If I do have to be called on, I'm going to be ready. I know what's going on. So, yeah, I mean, I it makes more sense. And so if this works out, look, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a little bit of a zero-sum game for Ryan Pace because he will have, you know, if Trubisky plays four, five, six games and struggles, he's out, Foles comes in. He gets the scarlet letter for Trubisky, but at the same time, he also has the foresight to understand that if Foles plays well, you know, that was about as good a safety net as they probably could have gotten this offseason.
Right, and I think when you look at the money, some people say, well, he's getting an exorbitant amount of money. I don't think so. I think he's getting really good backup high-end backup and bottom-of-the-barrel starter money. Still, when you look at the amount of money that the Bears are spending on the quarterback position, they're not close to what some of the other teams are spending just for their starter.
Right. And that's how you can afford Khalil Mack, and that's how you can afford Allen Robinson, and that's how you can afford other pieces. So it all works together, and I think, right, the longer I've let this marinate, the more I think that it wasn't an exorbitant price. And they may have played this pretty smartly, actually. So even if Trubisky, you know, struggles, I'd love to see the kid do well. I really would. I think he's got some talent. I really do. But there just seemed to be that loss of confidence last year, and it started with the opener, and it just snowballed from there, and it felt like everything just sort of weighed on him doubly last year, and he could never shake it.
Hey, Eric, another thing that Greg and I have already broached and want to get your opinion on this as well is, as we record this on a Wednesday, obviously the deadline for opting out is tomorrow, Thursday, and as of, I think right now, it's 56 players with some prominent names like Damian Williams and C.J. Mosley, among others, but New England's got 8 players that have already opted out, a lot more than any other team. What, if anything, do you read into that?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Curran, a writer there locally who I respect a lot, have known for many years, immediately kind of, you know, connected some dots and said, hey, I wonder what would happen if Tom Brady was still here. Would this many people be opting out, right? They haven't had a chance to really meet Cam except for some of the receivers that he's been throwing to in the last few weeks, but you know, is there this sense of doom like, hey, I'm not putting my body on the line for a, you know, a 7-9 team or a 9-7 team that misses the playoffs or what have you? So do I know that to be true? No, I haven't heard that specifically from anybody inside the organization, anybody connected to any of the players. So we kind of have to wait and see. Some of those decisions you can understand, right? I mean, Dante Hightower has a lot of money in the bank. He's had a lot of injuries. You can see why he would do that. You know, you understand, obviously, the guys with pregnant wives or expecting wives who are, you know, delivering sooner. They just had babies. They want to, you know, I get it, right? You have to really be cautious about certain things. But, you know, obviously, there were some decisions on that team and other teams where you say to yourself, I wonder if there's something else at play here. I mean, it's really hard to speculate because we're talking about individual decisions that are going to be different for all these guys. But, yeah, I mean, when I was sort of polling people around the league before the opt-outs started happening, I was told probably double digits, probably not triple digits in terms of the number of players who would opt out. At 56, I feel pretty good about it being under 100, but I wouldn't be shocked if there's a little mini wave here in the next, you know, 24 hours or so, and some more guys decide to do that.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me either. I don't know if the number is going to go over 25, though, or 75, rather. You know, and listening to what you were saying, and I don't want to bring up the writer's name, but, you know, I was talking to a prominent writer, and this was, a lot of this was with the early opt-outs, not any within the last couple of days. Most of the players who have opted out, and this isn't all, but most, have guys who have gotten a lot of bonus money in the last 12 to 18 months. Mm-hmm. And they can afford to sit for the year, where the guys who are going into the last year of a contract or whatever, they're playing football.
You know, and again, this is going to be unfair because I'm going to bring up one player who I actually just wrote about the other day, but I'll just use him as an example. Juwan James, the right tackle for the Broncos, right? He signs his big deal, 4 years, $51 million before the 2019 season, was the day one starter, but only played about 65 snaps last year. He was hurt. Kept trying to come back. He couldn't get on the field. He couldn't stay on the field. he was considered a big, big disappointment. John Elway says he's going to be our right tackle. They didn't draft a tackle. Maybe they did late, but I mean, if they didn't take a high pick on a tackle, that was going to be one of the big questions of this team, how Juwan James would play. He opts out. It kind of makes sense financially. Look, I don't know what his personal situation is, but he was a cut candidate after this year, and they would have only had like $6 million in dead money. Now that contract rolls over to 2021, and if they try to cut him in March, they're $19 million in the hole in dead money. So, look, they're gonna be smart about it and try to save their own hinds in this way. I get why a player would have that mentality. I don't know if that's the case with James or not, but it makes you think there are going to be some financial decisions involved here.
You know, Eric, when I got divorced in 1994, my lawyer told me it's always about the money, regardless of what
line,
the situation.
Right? It has to be.
That's right.
Hey, Eric. Yeah. Eric, great stuff. Greg said that you would deliver, and you certainly have. And we're going to hold you to it. If you want to be on this cast each and every week, or certainly more often than not, we're going to take you up on that offer. We appreciate your time today.
It just requires another fine intro every single week. It's got to be different, too. You got to mix it up, you know. So new ways to describe how amazing I am.
Well, we'll write the script for Greg going forward. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
all
my
right,
friend.
All right, fellas. That was awesome. Thanks.
All right, thanks. And we'll be back right after this.
If you enjoy football talk from Greg Gabriel, you might want to also listen to Draft on Tap, because it's co-hosted by Danny Shimon, one of his former pupils. Danny breaks down potential draft picks for the Chicago Bears. He and Ryan Badgley also interview top draft prognosticators throughout the season. The show is called Draft on Tap. It's co-hosted by Danny Shimon and Ryan Badgley, and you can find it on the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
And welcome back, and we do appreciate hearing from Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports. And again, you can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. And right now, Greg, we got a couple of questions that people have texted in. People want to always talk to you, Greg, because they know that you have the answers to just about everything. So
I wish I had the answers.
Well, listen, if you did, then I would come to you for a lot of my problems. You were talking about an ex-wife earlier. Anyway, go ahead, Aldo. You got some questions?
Yeah, Mama Bear on our Twitter machine sends a question and wants to know who is going to be the starting nose tackle for the Chicago Bears. Now, you already addressed this, some thoughts on the nose tackle position, so let me add to that, Greg, and ask you about two current free agents, Damon Snacks Harrison, who has played with a number of teams in the NFL of late, the Detroit Lions, and is currently a free agent, and Mike Daniels, who had some excellent, excellent seasons with the Green Bay Packers. Both of them are 31 years old, and both are current free agents. Do you like any one of those guys to come into Bears camp and compete for a job and maybe be part of a rotation with John Jenkins?
Well, to answer the question first, I think Jenkins is going to be the starting nose tackle when the Bears are in their base defense. That's why they signed him to be the backup to Eddie Goldman. Now he moves up to the top spot. I still think they may need a backup. When you look at those two names that you just presented, I kind of discount Daniels only because of size. You know, he's more of a three technique type of football player than a nose tackle. You want a big grunt in the middle that can occupy people, take on two blockers and free up the linebackers. So if I had to have my choice between Harrison and Daniels, I'd go with Harrison. But again, that's going to be the pro department's decision. And then, you know, who else is trying to sign those players and what's it going to cost?
And the other question is from my nephew, Harry Gandia Jr. He texted in, in all your years and working in the NFL draft rooms, can you share a story about a player, drafted or not, by the team that employed you at the time, that caused lots of debate on whether he should be a member of that team?
You know, I'll answer it this way. Your decisions on who to draft are generally made before the draft. Your arguments are made in the meetings leading up. And the player that created the most debate was Simeon Rice when I was with the New York Giants. And when I say the most debate, the debate carried on for a day and a half. And mostly between the head coach of the Giants at the time, Dan Reeves, who did not, and I can go into a funny story, and as long as we got all the time in the world on these podcasts, I will. Dan Reeves did not want Rice. The scouting department did want Rice. We wouldn't have gotten him anyway. He went, I think, number two overall or number three overall. We had the fourth pick. And so, you know, during the course of the battle, Reeves kept saying he can't play. He's only got one move, yada, yada, yada. So let's fast forward because we didn't get him anyway. He's the first round pick of the Arizona Cardinals, and the Giants have to play the Cardinals in the season, during the season. So the offensive line coach at the time goes to Dan on Monday as they're getting ready to put the game plan together and said, Dan, we're going to have to either keep a tight end in or a back end to chip Simeon Rice because he's going to kill the quarterback. Reeves gets irate and he says, you block him with the tackle. He can't play. He stinks. That's why I didn't want him in the draft. He says, okay. So fast forward to the game on Sunday. Before the first quarter was out, Simeon Rice had two sacks and the quarterback was out of the game.
Oh, no. Unbelievable. It's a great story.
All right, Greg, I know another topic that you wanted to talk to everybody about is the added cap space due to opt-outs, but it might not be just as simple as that. Why don't you pick it up from there?
Well, originally, what people thought was the proration on signing bonuses was still going to be carried into the cap this year. So let's say you signed a guy last year and then he opted out this year and you gave him just to use simple numbers, you gave him a $5 million signing bonus. That $5 million signing bonus on a five-year contract is prorated as $1 million a year for each of the 5 years. Well, that $1 million for 2020, many thought was going to be carried over into this year's cap. The only part that you're losing is whatever his salary was for the year. That's not the case. Everything comes off the books, the proration of the signing bonus and the player's salary. So now you're getting an inflated salary cap numbers for this year. The Bears' salary cap has already gone up by about, because of Goldman's opt-out, you know, over $10 million, I think. So on paper, it looks like they got a lot of money to go out and get players. That's a false feeling right there. It's not like that money's gone away. It's there. It's just not being counted this year. And you have to, when you're doing new contracts, or you go out on the street and try to sign somebody, or even you try to renegotiate a contract or extend the contract of a current player, you still have to figure that contract into play because it's going to take effect again in the 2021 season. And on top of that, nobody knows what the cap's going to be, and the cap could go down next year. So you have to be very, very careful with how you spend your money. It's not an open credit card. It's not free money. And that $10 million really isn't there. It's just on paper, and that's it.
I get it. All right, let's talk about the NFC North. We'll broach it a little bit, and as the weeks go on, and again, what we're going to do here on the podcast, certainly when we get into the season, I can't wait for this season, especially the beginning part of the season with no preseason games. You know, I think those first couple of games are going to be sort of sloppy. Certainly the first one will. I think the tackling might be a little shoddy. I think the timing is going to be off because it's one thing practicing up, let's say, at Halas Hall or the other practice facilities against, you know, the other guys on your team, but with no preseason games whatsoever. Listen, you saw what the Bears offense did at the beginning of the season last year with basically no preseason games, you know, under their own belt. So now the whole team is not going to have any preseason. The whole league will not have any preseason. I think it's going to be pretty sloppy.
Well, you know, you can look at that two ways. And part of this just came into my mind as you were discussing that. Yes, I agree that it's going to be some sloppy play. Tackling could be poor. On the other hand, because and there's a lot that comes into this, practices are totally closed, so you don't have media reporting on what's going on in practice, who's good, who's not good, whatever. Teams that have new coaches, their opponents the first couple of weeks are going to be totally clueless as to what those teams are going to do offensively and defensively. You go back and say, okay, the defensive coordinator is so-and-so, and this is what he did, or, you know, as a coordinator somewhere else, or if he was a, you know, a top assistant in another place, this is what they did. We can assume they might do that, but we don't know for sure. And offensively, you have no idea how they're going to call the plays, who's going to be lined up where, because you have no tape at all of which to look at, you know, those particular players. And I think also when you look at Nagy, Matt Nagy, and the way he ran the offense his first year here in Chicago in 2018, caught some teams off guard with the offense, and they were able to put some big yards up. I think that could play into the Bears' hand again this year because of all the different new players, especially at the tight end position. I think you're going to see it. We said this before. I think you're going to see a lot of 12 personnel, meaning one running back, two tight ends, two wide receivers, and not three wide receivers.
All right, so my next question is, and I don't know if there's, you know, it's just a guess at the answer here, but with no preseason games and not as much practice time and certainly not as much hitting in those practices, does the offense or the defense have an advantage when the season starts? Is there any guess on that?
I think the defense always has some sort of an advantage because there's more athleticism, so to speak, on the defensive side of the ball. When you get into pass rush situations, you don't have the pass blocking timing isn't there, especially game situation when you got to, you know, react to stunts and things like that. But all in all, I agree with you. I think the play could be sloppy, could be very, very sloppy, but that's just going to be the new normal for the NFL, at least for this year. Maybe next year we get back to what we're used to seeing.
All right, Greg, the NFC North, and we're just going to do like a real thumbnail sketch here. I'll give you my thoughts, and then you can give me yours. I mean, everything evolves around the quarterbacks. It just does, especially in this division, including the Bears. Minnesota, Kirk Cousins is at the helm, of course. Dalvin Cook is going to be there at the beginning of training camp. There was some thought that he might not be there right off the bat. They have a couple of good tight ends. Their defense has been good the last couple of years, but I think their offense is starting to catch up. I think Minnesota is still the class of the division. That's just my opinion going into the season. Green Bay, of course, with Aaron Rodgers, although now they have a guy who's going to be breathing down his neck, and we'll talk about Jordan Love. I don't understand what they did here in just a second. A.J. Dillon is there. The offense, as long as Rodgers is healthy, I mean, the offense is going to put up some points. And then there's Detroit with Matthew Stafford, who on would he have a false positive on his COVID test the other day? I don't understand false positives and negatives. All I know is that, you know, when my teachers in grade school always put with red marks, I knew that I had negatives on my assignments.
That was a real negative?
Oh, well, consistent negatives. Anyway, Detroit's offensive line has improved. They have two good running backs. So I think the emphasis in Detroit is going to be away from Stafford, which I think is a good thing. He's put up good numbers, obviously, but has never won anything. But I think now they're going to run the football a little bit more going forward. But what are your thoughts on the NFC North?
Well, I agree with you with what you say about Detroit. I think they've got some talent at the running back position. I think that may be the centerpiece of their offense. Stafford is a very talented player and he puts up great numbers, but like you said, he doesn't win. He didn't win in college. He hasn't won in the NFL. What makes you think he's going to all of a sudden win now when he has no history of winning, especially in big games? He loses big games. You know, I think he's a talented guy that has a level, and he's reached that level, and that level isn't a championship quarterback. He's a good quarterback with outstanding numbers. Their defense is good. Their offensive line, I think it's a little bit better. They signed, I don't even know how to say his last name, Vitae, who actually was a backup in Philly and played a lot because of injuries over the last 2 years. They signed him to be their right tackle. He's going to help. They got a rookie in there, too, who's going to help. The guy who was starting, I think, on the right side, Wagner, he's now starting at Minnesota. So who's wrong on that decision? You know, was Detroit wrong in letting him go, or is Minnesota wrong on signing him? We'll find that out during the season. Minnesota, I think when you look at the overall strength of the team, obviously their quarterback, Kirk Cousins, to me, is no Aaron Rodgers. I think he's as good as the people around him. They lost Diggs. who was a valuable, he really wasn't their number one. He's number two. Thielen's the number one receiver. Then they drafted Jefferson from LSU in the first round. Is he going to be able to put up the kind of numbers that Diggs put up? I don't think so. He's a rookie receiver. It takes rookie receivers usually a while to get acclimated to the NFL, and especially now with training camp the way it is he going to be ready to go right off the bat when the season starts? But their defense is strong. I think that, but still in saying that, they're going to have a rookie cornerback probably starting on one side, and that they let Rhodes go into free agency. Then Green Bay, they're as good as Aaron Rodgers is going to, or they'll be as good as Aaron Rodgers is. And I know they tried to chore up the offensive line a little bit with Wagner. Overall, I think that line, when you look at the individuals, they're not that great, but the group as a whole plays very, very soundly. They got a good running game. They got a good, not a great receiving core, but a good receiving core. The best is obviously Adams. After that, you look at the other guys. Lazard, who came out of Iowa State, is a big possession receiver, catches the ball well, but can't run worth a lick. And the other guy's really an unknown quantity. Valdez, how do you say his last name? Valdez Scantling or something. He's an unknown commodity in the NFL. So we'll see how that plays. Their defense is pretty strong across the board.
Why did Green Bay draft Jordan Love? What are they saying with that?
I don't know. I looked at that. I think when Jerry was here, And Jerry and I are real close friends, Jerry Angelo, I'm referring to. He said the definition of the GM is to protect the franchise, do what's best for the franchise. You're not necessarily looking at year one to year two to year three. You got to do what's best for the franchise. Mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5 years down the road, too. And Aaron Rodgers is 36 years old now. Who is going to be the quarterback 2 or 3 years from now? Is it better to draft the guy now and prepare him, just like they had Brett Favre when they drafted Aaron Rodgers? Yeah. And Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years behind Favre. Mm-hmm. And then when he got his chance to play in his 4th year, he was lights out. And so that decision really paid off. I think the people up in Green Bay were really looking at that situation and saw how it paid off for them. And look at this the same way.
All right, speaking of quarterbacks, I was reading a list of top quarterbacks by a lot of the quote-unquote experts, and they pretty, not unanimously, but pretty much were in agreement that the top 3 quarterbacks, and I want to get your opinion on this, right now they have Lamar Jackson, who's very talented, obviously, and put up some incredible numbers last year from Baltimore as the top quarterback in the NFL. You're rolling your eyes. I'm glad you're doing that. Russell Wilson second, and Patrick Mahomes 3rd. Now, how could you have him 3rd? Was he the rookie of the year and the MVP already? He's won a Super Bowl. He's young. He's only going to get better. How is he the 3rd best quarterback in the league?
Well, forget about that. How do they have Jackson as number one?
I don't know. I mean, he's talented, and I think he's actually going to get better.
Did you watch the playoff game?
Well, yeah, I did.
Okay.
He did not perform.
That's right. And in the playoffs, he stunk. And playoff football is a lot different than regular season football. He's not an accurate thrower, and when you watch enough film, he's dangerous. He can make plays with his feet, and because of that, he gives the defense a lot to think about. But to say he's the number one quarterback, he's not even in the top 10, let alone number one.
Maybe for rotisserie players, he might be ahead of Mahomes. I don't even know if
because you're going to use yards, rushing
and,
like
and throwing,
sure,
and whatever. I mean, he put up
a
boatload of numbers, but I don't know. I'm glad you rolled your eyes, and I'm glad you got your opinion on that.
I'm going to put Mahomes and Rodgers as the two top in my mind.
Okay. When we were talking to Eric earlier, he was talking about some players who are still unsigned around the league, and there's a couple of very talented wide receivers, at least talented from what they're potentially and have done in the past. One of them is Antonio Brown, who is going to be suspended the first 8 games, no matter what. Another one is Josh Gordon. Can you see either one of these guys signing? And you know, Pete Carroll is one of those coaches, much like back in the day, Oakland always signed these renegade kind of players. They were known for doing that. And I think nowadays, maybe Seattle and Pete Carroll might be that kind of franchise that signs renegade kind of players. I mean, Josh Gordon's very talented, also has a ton of problems. Antonio Brown, obviously talented player. He has his own set of problems and is going to be suspended the first 8 games. Do you think either one of these guys eventually signs?
Yeah, I can see both of them getting signed, Josh Gordon first. Josh Gordon's problem is addiction.
Yeah.
Okay, and he can't overcome that problem. It's not that he's not trying. He can't, and I think given that, he will always at least get an opportunity. Brown, on the other hand, is a cancer, and he's nuts. So, you know, when you watch, just watch his tweets, how he... 2 weeks ago, he retired. He was done. Football's behind me. And now he gets an 8-game suspension. Well, I'm ready to come back after the 8 games. I'll accept the, you know, and you know, he picks up a new agent who is not one of the upper echelon of agents. Good agent, but not one of what you call the upper echelon of agents. The guy who dumps him is Drew Rosenhaus, who's one of the best. And when Drew dumps you,
that's telling you something.
That tells you a whole lot. You know, somebody may. But, you know, look what happened in Oakland. And you know, they were laying out the red carpet for him, and it didn't work. And, you know, there's a reason why he got drafted in the 6th round. These problems go back to when he was in college. Mm-hmm. This isn't something that's new over the last couple of years.
All right, one more free agent, not a wide receiver, Jadeveon Clowney. I think he's unsigned as we're recording this.
Right.
Do you think he eventually gets signed by somebody?
Yeah, I think he'll get signed probably within the next couple of weeks. With him, it's the medical. And is it, how healthy is he, and can you get a full season out of him? He was looking for some big, big dollars. And then when we saw some of the contracts like Bosa got just recently and stuff, you know, in his mind, his price tag may have even gone up. And teams, you know, where we are now, we're in the first week of August. They don't have a lot of money to spend. And then go back to what we were talking about before. Even if you do have some excess cap dollars because of opt-outs, you got to be careful with how you spend that because it carries over into next year.
Hey, Greg, as always, time has flown by on this podcast, but as also, once again, I learn every time I sit next to you or have you on the phone, I learn something about football. So I appreciate it.
Do I got to pay you now?
Yes, you do.
Somebody's
got to pay me. I don't care where it comes from. Daddy always said, don't do anything for free. Anyway, you know, I love doing this with you. You know that. And I'll look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Greg.